Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to the Slate XX Gabfest for Thursday, August 11th, the Olympics Extravaganza Edition. Hannah is away this week, but I'm June Thomas, a writer and editor at Slate, and I am here in the New York studios with Noreen Malone of New York Magazine. Hello, Noreen.
Hi, June.
And we're lucky enough to have Slate's TV critic Willa Paskin joining us for what will be a very special Olympics edition of the Gabfest. Hello, Willa.
Hi.
You are secretly a jock, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was a jock when I was growing up, and that sort of feels like fundamental to my identity, even though I have forsaken jockdom two decades ago at this point or something.
You watch sports.
I'm into sports. I care about sports in the way that one does when one grows up caring about sports.
All right, cool. So as I said, we're focusing on the quadrennial fortnight of awesomeness that is the Summer Olympic Games. We'll be talking about the endless drama that is Olympic gymnastics. We'll look at the controversy over whether intersex athletes like Caster Semenya should be allowed to compete in women's events. And finally, we'll talk about the things that we've loved and the things that have outraged us thus far in the games of the 31st Olympiad. Then, in our Slate Plus segment, we'll decide if NBC's coverage has been sexist. Wonder where we'll come down on that. If you're not yet a Slate Plus member, you can start your free 2-week trial by visiting slate.com/xxplus. Now, Willa, in my very complex setup for the gymnastics section of our discussion, I just want to ask you about your attitude to women's gymnastics at the Olympics. Do you worship them? Do you adore them? Or do you merely love Olympic gymnastics? Discuss.
I think in years past I think adored is right. But I am only feeling love this time around. I think that the team is obviously so great, and the girls, women on the team are all superb athletes, and Simone Biles is really fantastic to watch. And I loved Allie Reisman last year, sort of not last year, last Olympics, kind of in a little Jewish pride way. And I think Gabby Douglas is great, and Laura Hernandez is very cute. And I'm forgetting one of them.
Madison. Everyone
just
forgets
like
Madison.
And that's been great, but I just feel like it has been so sprinkled through the primetime coverage. It kind of hasn't had any momentum to it. And also they're just so, so dominant that there's this tension in watching gymnastics where it's like horrible and painful to watch because you're so worried about them. But that's also sort of part of the importance of watching it. Like that's what's riveting about it. And they just seem so good that it's like kind of a foregone conclusion that they're going to crush. I mean, even if they all fell down many, many times, the difficulty level is so high that they would still win. So it's just like, even though I hate the tension, without it, I feel like a little bereft.
It also seems like they don't have a ton of rivals this time around. I mean, the other programs have gone down in quality as America seems to have become totally all dominant. And it's just, there's no rivalry. There's no neck and neck business. Noreen, Writing in your magazine recently, Megan O'Rourke asked if watching gymnastics is like watching the NFL in an era when we know its true price. You know, we viewers aren't naive anymore about what doing gymnastics and what being elite gymnast does to these young women, you know, what it does to their bodies, what it does to their lives outside the gym, the physical risks. Do you ask yourself the same question, or are you able to watch it without feeling bad about it?
No, I don't think it bugs me. I mean, so we should say a little bit more clearly what the problems that Megan is referring to are. So just as these Olympics were starting, the Indianapolis Star put out a big article detailing years and years and pretty widespread sexual abuse among gymnastics coaches, most of whom were working with younger girls, not at the national level. But there have been coaches at the national level who have been accused of sexual abuse of the athletes. Certainly in...
And four of those coaches have been found guilty and one killed himself. I mean, this is not just accusations.
Yeah, it's
absolute
real.
Absolute
proof. Yeah. And then separately, you know, gymnastics requires a small body that can tumble through the air. Sometimes when girls are hitting puberty, their natural growth doesn't, you know, stay what would be ideally aerodynamic, so they don't eat so much. And also just the risk of it, right? There's a vault that at least one woman is trying at these gymnastics that, like, if she does it wrong, it'll kill her. There was that really terrible moment when the British gymnast really fell on her neck in the most painful way, and she kept going, and then she was like, no, I can't. Yeah. And then she went back in and did...
vaulted twice.
Right. And, she was treated as a hero. She was a teenage girl treated as a hero for... playing through a concussion. So yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff.
I think the NFL headline is totally misleading, though. I think that was, even reading the piece, I don't think Megan was actually making that claim quite as much as the headline.
Well, you know who her editor was me, so we can literally blame the editor because I forced her to bring that out more. So I'm just exposed as a total hypocrite in this segment. But great headline. Come on, you clicked.
No, I did click, but then I was like, because I thought it was so provocative, and then I was like, oh, she's not even really saying that in the way that the headline makes it seem, and it's not quite the same. I mean, we're not talking about these girls having
repetitive traumatic brain injury
yes. that's going to stay with them forever. Not that they won't have physical ailments that will stay with them forever, as do football players.
Right.
But it just is not taxing physically in exactly the same way that football is. I mean, which doesn't, that's a really high bar.
I think the argument is more psychological, that there might be something particularly tortured to the mind of teenager. But Megan herself walked that back and was sort of like, I got a lot from gymnastics. It's kind of great. Again, her editor was a real asshole, pushed her towards us. That she got, you know, a ton from it, that to see teenage girls being so sure of themselves out there and so full of joy is kind of a thing of beauty. And I think that's where I land ultimately, is that, like, these are phenomenal athletes who are, if you look at the way that, like, the current form of gymnastics, it's a very, very athletic thing. It's no longer balletic. It's no longer, you know, sort of a...
Yeah, when they move on the floor, they barely move to the music.
Yeah.
It's almost like a joke.
<They're>
that music is playing.
Although they're better this time around than they were in the last Olympics. I mean, there is actual dancing, not just stand, pose, tumble.
Laurie can dance.
Yes.
So, yeah, they clearly have muscular bodies. I'm sure they are crazy disciplined about what they eat, but it doesn't seem, at least on the U.S. team, it seems like there's been some sort of a sea change. They're older. I think, you know, progress is being made.
Although when you watch the coverage, it does seem like, I mean, partly because they don't tell us anything about the actual maneuvers that are being made. They keep it all to, you know, happy kind of narrative stuff, even when they're actually, you know, tumbling or vaulting or, you know, doing their actual maneuvers. All that's left are the narrative things. That's all we actually know about what they're doing.
Right.
And because they do tend to be younger, although I wonder, like, does Gabby Douglas live with her mother? I mean, we keep seeing her mother. We know that Simone Biles lives with her parents, but because we keep seeing her parents. But there's a strange kind of way that the television coverage is done that makes them seem like children, which they're not.
There was a great, I thought, Reeves Wideman piece who, Noreen, I believe you also had it when he writes for New York Magazine.
But not
but he was
piece.
Writing for The New Yorker about basically just how, he also profiled Simone Biles for The New Yorker, just how bad the gymnastics coverage is. And I actually think this is true across the board, mm-hmm. where there's a lack of detail about the actual sport.
Yeah.
That NBC would excuse by blaming women who only like reality TV and miniseries and don't want the detailed analysis of what athletes are actually doing. But I think it's totally bogus and is true in swimming for sure and in all of the sports that they cover, which is that there's all this knowledge, extra knowledge about actually what is happening, the difference between an Aminar and something else, you know. And all we know about gymnastics is like that you have to stick the landing, which right. isn't even really that important. You know, like there's he in this piece, he talks about how when Simone Biles has a vault, even if it's perfect, she's never going to get a perfect score because she crosses her toes.
Yeah, that was so interesting.
You know, it's just like that's just the littlest thing. But of course, that's true of every single element right. that they do, or like helicopter legs, which is having your legs mm-hmm. crossed, versus like mm-hmm. cowboy legs, which is having your legs wide open when you're tumbling through the air. And I just wish they would say some of those things, which are totally right. accessible and actually don't take away from the reality TV miniseriesness of it at all, but only sort of add to being able to follow along. And also just in terms of swimming, it's like swimming is hella boring. You know, like there is a way that swimming is, you cannot see what they are doing. They are submerged in water in their own world in splash, like the most beautiful stroke in the world you can't see. You can't see their faces, unlike track stars. And all they're just like telling us nothing. We're silently watching people splash through the pool and then someone wins. Like, there's more information. The coolest part is when there you can see underwater.
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
The dolphin
kicks say,
at the turn.
We can at least now, as of the last couple of Olympics, we've actually been able to see them underwater, and that does seem like you can kind of glean for yourself, you know, the specifics of the stroke or the way, or you can actually see, oh my gosh, look how she's holding her hand. But yeah, we shouldn't have to figure that out for ourselves. And you know, especially this year where you know we've either seen Michael Phelps. Constantly, even when he's not swimming that day, or we've been seeing the Chad Leclos, Michael Phelps stare off when actual,
stare-off.
Yeah, exactly, alleged stare off when actual events are happening that were.
But I thought that was so telling, the stare off, yeah. Because so there was a moment Monday night that Chad Leclos, who had won the 200 meter butterfly in 2012,
my
was
beautiful
like,
boy.
But yeah, and his dad was sort of a viral sensation, Bert, yeah. Had like been sort of dancing, rockying, like uh-huh. kind of shaking out his arms in front of Michael Phelps. And Michael Phelps, without pretending to notice Michael Phelps, who was a seat away and appeared to be staring like daggers into Leclos. The NBC announcers were literally like, this is such good television. We should just put a camera in here and never leave. Like, we hope this event never starts. And it's like, I get what you're saying, but like in the right. in the scheme of great television, like there's two dudes kind of staring at each other and no one's like about to throw any tables. Like there's no reality TV producer in the world that's like, that's great television. And then they're like, why would we even watch swimming? Swimming's so boring compared to this sort of mundane beef between two like beefy Olympians. And I just thought that was like so, I'm like, if it's not interesting enough, the actual swimming, that's on you. Like, give us enough information to make it more interesting, or perhaps there is no information. Like, if there's no strategy for some of these things other than just, like, go really fast, then show us less swimming.
Or you wouldn't have to hire these commentators for their expertise if they're not going to share their expertise. You know, we have Tim Daggett, we have Rowdy Gaines, who really do, you know, Nastia Lukin, who really, really do know these sports. They've won multiple medals, gold medals, and yet they're really not given, why hire them if you're not going to let them say anything that actually requires their level of expertise?
Well, it's nice that you guys are so high-minded, but I love the interpersonal rivalries. I mean, I agree with you. I would like to have more sort of technical knowledge dropped on me because it does get kind of boring if you don't know what is making Katie Ledecky faster or what makes Simone Biles so great. But like, come on, don't you want to see?
Sure.
It's great. Like, I'm obsessed with the interpersonal dynamics of the U.S. women's gymnastics team. Yeah. It seems like this weird forced sorority to me. I just kind of love that part.
You like the performer hugs after every performance?
No, they're so uncomfortable. And then they go up and like do a cheer for the camera, and then they kind of like don't make any eye contact with each other.
You can tell from the hugs like who they actually like
yes.
and who they're just hugging because they have to. Like yes. some of them seem friendly and some of them just seem really cold.
Yeah.
Some of them are being treated poorly. I think we need to do an intervention.
Also, Allie Reisman totally runs that shit. She is so in charge.
Did you happen to read her 25 Things for Us Weekly?
No.
And then did you read Heather Schwedell's analysis of it?
What did she say in her 25 Things?
It's so good. I love Celine Dion. And then she also name checked like three brands that like obviously she must co-sponsor. Like buy. I love like GK leotards for my line. And like there was another. There was, like,
Revlon skincare.
She's getting it done. Totally. Getting it done.
But she was also like, I'm the most princessy girl in the whole world. Like, I could shop till I drop. Like, she just really embraced the, in certain ways, the gymnast stereotype. But, like, it was kind of charming because also, obviously, she's a great athlete.
Yeah.
So this year's team is a pretty robust group of young women. Like, the current trend in gymnastics seems to reward women with muscular bodies. You know, you want to be dynamic spark plugs rather than the waif style that was in vogue a few years ago. But there's still this monster emphasis on femininity, you know, the way they style their hair, the way they do their makeup. Does that make their impact on young viewers less radical, do you think?
Does it make their impact on young? No. I mean, if you're a little girl, you kind of just think it's cool that they both can do crazy things and that they look pretty, right? Mm-hmm. I actually didn't even realize they were wearing makeup for a long time. Like, obviously they are, but I think
they wear more makeup than they did when we were little.
Yeah.
I know they did when we were little, but I don't remember it being like a thing.
Although, you know what was weird? I mean, I've never worn makeup in my life, but yesterday I was critiquing their makeup because as they came out, they were so shiny faced.
Okay, so this is the problem. So first of all, I want to say that if I were going on national television in front of millions of people, hell yeah, if they gave me an option for makeup, I would wear it.
Like,
I would
wear makeup like that.
Not like that.
I mean, the thing about that is interesting is that there's two levels of makeup we're working on, which is like it's stage makeup for the arena and the judges, which is always, always going to be too much. Like, it's like when you see mm-hmm. theater people. Mm-hmm. And then it's also makeup for TV, which is so close to you, it doesn't need to be too much. And so it kind of has to walk this weird line where it registers in person, but it doesn't over-register on TV. But it's always going to over-register a little if it's supposed to play in an arena.
Yeah. But I think the more interesting thing is that at least this year, I didn't watch it quite as closely in 2012, but there's this like feminist critique of like, oh, why do they all have their hair in these buns? Why are they wearing these leotards? And Slate's doing this and New York Magazine's doing this. And frankly, like, I think sort of shaming them for adhering to some sort of gymnast code is kind of not cool, like on feminist grounds, like saying, why can't they just wear their hair however they want to? They want to wear it in the stupid bun. They're gymnasts. They like have a totally different aesthetic than you do. They've grown up wearing leotards and like Swarovski crystals are like the end game for them. Like, let them have their moment. Like, I don't know. It doesn't bug them.
Well, they don't all want to, but there was a good New York Times piece about the history of like the sequins on the Leos, which has multiplied, you know, it's like an exponential growth of Swarovski crystals.
Because Marta Karoli loves them. I love that part.
And also because they register to judges. And it sort of ended with this quote from Jordan Weber, who actually has this amazing story where she could have been on the team this year and she decided not to even train to be the coach, to be a manager of the UCLA women's team. Like, she was supposed to play, but she had spiked her amateur, mm-hmm. whatever. It's like a very cute story. And she at the end was like, I guess you might be able to find a gymnast who isn't into sparkles, but like, I have never met them.
Yeah. I think people are imposing their own values on these women in the name of feminism, and it gives me the icks.
I mean, it's true, right? Feminism, everyone should be able to do whatever they want involving as much makeup and feminine play as they feel fit. But like, there is something very... I mean, this actually moves into our next subject with Caster Semenya kind of mm-hmm. nicely. But there is just something about gymnastics that just seems like this crucible of these ideas of athleticism and these ideas about feminism and just about women and how we are supposed to present ourselves to the world. That, yes, everyone should be able to wear as much makeup as they choose to do. But one doesn't get the sense that if a gymnast did not want to wear makeup,
it would
get
that
away with that. You know, it's like, it's not, it is true, like probably it's like dress up and that's part of their, sort of that's part of their uniform. It's part of their armor when they go out there, but it's like no other choice.
Do you guys feel differently watching male gymnasts than you do when watching the women compete?
Oh, yeah.
I don't watch male gymnasts.
Who cares?
Oh, my goodness.
They should not have their shirts on.
Okay.
Not even because I would watch them, because it would be more interesting.
Yeah, because they want us to ogle them, right?
Right. They want us to ogle them. And I think, I know we're not supposed to objectify people, but it feels like it's okay at the Olympics because they haven't developed these muscles and these amazing bodies just for vanity. Not just for vanity.
They've Have you seen their Instagram? The male gymnast, the men's gymnastics team is extremely vain.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can see why. But
also, honestly, in the Olympics, it's kind of nice because it's like, we're not there for their brains. I mean, like, whatever. I'm sure there's a lot of extremely bright athletes in the world. That is not what the Olympics is about.
You know what I get out of the Olympics is inspiration for new hairdos. The men's gymnastics team have fantastic hairdos. I'm really totally getting...
I mean, there is like the whole subtext of the Olympics as like a homosexual
or at least
extravaganza.
Yeah, or certainly a homoerotic extravaganza.
Yes, is very potent.
Speaking of diving. No, okay. Okay, on to our next segment. So, writing in Slate last week, Dan Engber wrote, "There's a ticking time bomb in Olympic sports, a new rule in place for the Rio de Janeiro Games, or rather, the recent suspension of an old rule that has opened up the field to female-identified athletes with intersex conditions. It now seems possible that multiple medals will be won and maybe even world records set by a group of women who until recently would have been excluded from competition or forced into treatment to suppress their levels of testosterone," end quote. The poster child for this kind of condition is South African runner Caster Semenya. As Engber put it, 7 years ago, while still a teenager, she destroyed her rivals in the 800 metres at the Track and Field World Championships. Shortly thereafter, a clumsy, ad hoc and supposedly secret assessment of Semenya's true biological sex made its way into the press. She'd been found to have internal testes in place of a uterus and ovaries, as well as high levels of testosterone. In April 2011, the IAAF, the organization that runs track and field, issued new guidelines on what they called hyperandrogenism in women's sports. If a female athlete tested high for functional testosterone, she was given a choice of giving up competition or undergoing treatment to reduce her testosterone levels, and the women who did that saw their performances decline. Then Duti Chand, an Indian sprinter who'd tested as having high levels of testosterone, complained that there was no scientific basis for the decision, and the court of arbitration for sport ruled in Chand's favour. So right now, intersex athletes aren't being excluded. So quite a bit of setup. But Willa, does this seem fair to you? Like, given the uncertainty of the science, is this something that the IAAF and the IOC should be trying to get right? Or are we really just kind of policing some athletes' gender presentation?
I find this issue to be genuinely complex in a way that is almost like it's great, actually,
yeah.
Because it makes you realize there is not like easy answers or sides to things that are genuinely complex. I feel a lot of different things about it. I mean, it's interesting because I think the instinct with a situation like this is to sort of compare it to other similar situations. And it does and doesn't scan, right? Mm-hmm. So there's ways that it is similar to, example, for like, is it the Women's Festival in Michigan?
Yeah, which is, you have to be a women bomb women too.
So there was this music festival in Michigan that was a women's music festival that sort of ended in the last couple of years because there was this huge controversy about whether transgendered women were going to be allowed to come to this festival. And the organizers didn't want to let them. It was only women-born women were allowed to come, and it sort of blew up. It was captured in a season of Transparent.
Indeed.
If that's helpful. And it seems in a way like this is – you could see the argument against someone like Caster Semenya competing would be similar, right? That there is like some advantage that accrues actually to people with genetically male characteristics, and there's a reason to keep that separate. But of course, the difference is that Caster Semenya was raised as a woman. So actually any of the sort of social advantages of being raised as a man, she does not have. And it's true of many of these intersex athletes. So it becomes like we're talking about sort of genetic determinism instead of nurture. But I also think that there's a way that our whole understanding of transgender people at this point is so aggressively like scrimmed over this duality. Like you're either, mm-hmm. you know, people know in their heart that they're a man or they know in their heart that they're a woman, and it's very clear. And that a lot of these intersex athletes actually, I mean, they may feel very strongly that they're a woman. They may feel very strongly that they're a man. They may have been, you know.
Right, raised.
But it's less, it's like they're whatever they were born as, or they're in between, and it's a much more nebulous and gray field, and it doesn't even have the clarity that we have, I think, probably over-ascribed to transgender people mm-hmm. because it's just easier for us to understand. Like, the narrative is easier. Yeah. People really identify as these two categories and nowhere in between. And so suddenly we're just in this situation where there's all these different variations and all these different things, and we're not just talking about XY chromosomes. You know, it's like, and it's just genuinely confusing. And it's like, how could the IOC sort this out when we can barely right. sort this out in any part of our universe?
Yeah. There was a great episode of Hang Up and Listen a couple of weeks ago where they talked about the case and of Caster Semenya. And David Epstein, who wrote a fantastic book called The Sports Gene, I believe, who's an absolute expert on the science, you know, he had to sort of admit that whoever he's talking to persuades him. Essentially, it was what he said. Like, he knows the science backward and forward, but it's just not as dispositive as everyone would like. You know, you do get swayed by the narrative, and because there's no, you know, there's no obvious right and wrong.
I do think it's interesting that in Caster Semenya's case, according to a bunch of articles that we read in advance, that like they think that a number of the people who are yeah. going to medal in the 800 are intersex athletes. They just haven't been outed as intersex athletes, and that actually intersex athletes are disproportionately represented in medal categories and in sort of the Olympics across the board. And that there's a way that specifically when you just think about Caster Semenya, that it's so unfair because she's become the face of it. She's also, you know, has sort of embraced it. She's not like she has a sort of butch aesthetic. She's mm-hmm. not like trying to look more feminine than mm-hmm. she is or than she does naturally. And so she just like it's like they're running against a man where, of right. course, like if there's all these other intersex runners, it's like you actually it's not that cut and dried.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me that the sort of the two poster children for the case in this are Semenya and Dutee Chand, who both are from countries. I mean, not that South Africa is a terribly, terribly poor country these days, but in the great scheme of things, in terms of their resources for athletics and sports science, they are places where, you know, it's not, they didn't have the resources to kind of to they didn't have the motivation to tell either of them to behave differently or to avoid the scrutiny, because back when they both were revealed and their privacy was completely blown apart, they, you know, it was when you could, when you got investigated by having somebody say, I think she looks like a man, which is, I mean, to reveal something about my dear departed grandfather, I used to watch the Olympics with him when I was a kid during the, you know, the years when the East Germans and the Eastern Europeans were taking drugs. And he would, you know, we would be watching races and he would yell, Özerman, meaning she's a man. Like, well, if it's, you know, in a sense, you can't blame people for noticing certain characteristics, but also, you know, ratting them out and saying, I don't need to investigate them. That just seems like the worst of all worlds.
Yeah, the description of how they determine someone's gender.
Oh, my God.
They, like, rank your breasts, your pubic hair, your...
They really get into your bits.
Can you imagine sitting there and having... that's, in some ways, every woman's worst nightmare, having someone just weigh in on whether her body is normal or not, right? Yeah. Like, how horrible is that? But to your point about, you know, East Germans looking like men... It's actually like the science of it is even more complicated. Like, apparently a lot of women who are super successful Olympic athletes might actually have something, and I hope I'm getting this right, called complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, which means that they do have possibly a Y chromosome and produce lots of testosterone, but they can't use it. So mm-hmm. their body doesn't have the elevated testosterone levels, so they would pass like this, you know, testosterone test, but they have all these other characteristics that come along with being a man, like maybe bigger shoulders or longer limbs, and those give them advantages. And so it's so hard to tease out all the different ways in which you're getting advantages by your physique. You might even not have this thing and just have like big shoulders, you know?
I also think one of the things that trips people up is certainly in America, in our regular life, we want to say that men and women are not different. Mm-hmm, like that is a thing that is very... That's how we talk about gender now in certain ways. Obviously, like, there are differences, but it's like anything a man can do, a woman can do. That's boilerplate fact. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the Olympics and physicality is it just rubs our noses in certain ways that is not true. Mm-hmm. And so things like men and women competing separately. It's like, it's not like men and women competing separately at the Oscars, where, yeah, you know, it really is the same and they could all just be in the same category. Like, there are actual biological reasons that a woman would be like the 5,000th fastest man, the fastest woman in the world, for example, or something like that. And that stuff like this, on the one hand, it seems like you could be a really progressive person and say, like, no, this is a moot issue. We should let all these intersex athletes totally compete. This is what it is to be a woman. It's this larger category. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, maybe the larger category is, what does it mean to be a man? You know, like, and it is just complicated because it's like, there are differences there are ineradicable differences that we're sort of used to that don't matter as much in our lives.
Well, and it makes you realize two things. One, that categories are arbitrary. And two, the categories are useful. And both of those things are things that we're trying to pretend are not the case progressive society right now. But you can't get away from it.
It's funny, though, that we're so obsessed with this because there are so many other physical advantages just advantages from where you grow up or, you know, how much support you get from your country. You know, Michael Phelps has these giant arms. That gives him an advantage. Should there be a category just for guys with arms who's, you know, of a percentage? You know, there are all these other advantages. That's the nature of elite sports. They've got weird advantages. I think we can stipulate that everybody at the Olympics has worked hard, but there are certain physical differences in some people, an ability to, fast twitch muscles or whatever it is, depending on the sport, that this one thing that I think we all agree that if it's different, if it's naturally occurring and if you're taking some kind of drugs that's a different situation. But if it is a naturally occurring condition and you are, you know, and it's not, you're not using deception, it just seems...
But then, okay, let me play devil's advocate for a minute. You're a woman who's, you know, herself like kind of a freak of nature in your talent. You've worked incredibly hard. And then there's someone who just like, you know, has the testosterone level of a man. Like, how do you feel in that moment, right?
So, but then, I mean, there are lots of things like that, though. I mean, say you are a gymnast who is a great gymnast, an extraordinary gymnast. If you happen to be competing when Simone Biles is at her peak, you're not probably going to win any gold medal. I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, if you were a great tennis player whose career just happens to coincide with an even greater tennis player.
I think that's different, though.
No, you're totally right. It's just true that gender, this stuff matters more to us. It seems more essential to our identity. It seems more fundamental to how we divide and categorize the world. That versus tall people or people have amazing lung capacity and short torsos or can bounce higher. And that may be sort of arbitrary, but again, just as you said so well, Noreen, like it is fundamental in a way that being tall or being fast is not.
Well, and it provides a greater advantage. Like it just does. Like
Dudu Chan is in the 2000s ranking. She's not the world's fastest woman.
Right.
You know, so it's like it does give some advantages, but they don't all make you the best athlete in the world.
Totally. But I think like on balance, men have a huge advantage, like a pretty average
athletes don't have the full advantage that men do.
Of course. As you said at the beginning, this is so complex and I'm definitely not arguing that. But can I just before we go? So we all went back and read a 2009 piece by Ariel Levy in The New Yorker on Caster Semenya. And I just want to read this paragraph because it stuck out at me as like, holy shit, a lot has changed in 6 years, 7 years. She wrote, there is much more at stake in organizing sports by gender than just making things fair. If we were to admit that at some level we don't know the difference between men and women, we might start to wonder about the way we've organized our entire world. Who gets to use what bathroom? Who is allowed to get married? And then she goes into what is allowed in marriage at that time, which was not same-sex marriage. And then she says, we depend on gender to make sense of sexuality, society, and ourselves. We do not wish to see it dissolve. And that still seems to be true in sports, but less true in society at large. So that just really stuck out at me.
And it also, you know, a reminder that the Olympics is an international event, that, you know, we're all in different stages, especially in certain things, we're all at different stages. And I think the way that we view gender is definitely one of those things. Let's move on to another aspect of the Olympics. Willa, you wrote about Katie Ledecky, who is in some ways the swimming superstar of Rio. Do you think she's getting the attention that she deserves? And as we know, she's not allowed to swim the 1500 meters at the Olympics because that's an event that they think is too much for women. How do you think
that's not what they said? They said that's not their official reason. The official reason is that they have too many events, not that women are incapable.
It's weird, though, don't you think, that they have too many events, but they've got room for the men to
But I don't think they think women aren't capable of it.
Or they don't say that.
Yeah.
It is old school.
It's vestigial. It's vestigial. Women can't do it.
Yeah. But that's not the official reason.
not the official reason. You're very sticking up for the IOC.
I know. So I don't know how I
She's put her anti-contrarian hat on today.
So why don't you like Katie Ledecky? Why don't you think
I love Katie Ledecky.
Katie Ledecky is great, but the thing is she's not like a flashy personality. And it's always interesting as the Olympics are happening, like if that matters or not. Again, I feel like there have been – for NBC having – really focused on the miniseries and reality show aspect of the games, there's been like not enough miniseries and reality show in terms of like developing the backstory of these athletes. Yeah. I mean, maybe there's just not time to do it, but I don't feel like I really know that much about Katie Ledecky. And she's sort of so unassuming and kind of she's no Lily King with her finger wag or Michael Phelps with his applaud me and glare, you know, that she is so dominant, but it's like she's kind of a quiet person. I think if she keeps winning, which she's going to do, it's like at some point the gold medals just accrue and it's it's like you become the person people remember anyway.
Well, and she also – so I was a high school swimmer and I've spent a lot of time observing the personality types of swimmers. And Phelps and Ryan Lochte are such dude swimmers. Like male swimmers are all kind of like – they're not all. I'm going to paint with a very broad brush here. They're like kind of potheads, cool dudes, like whatever. And women are all just like, keep your head down, like kind of dorky, very sweet. Like she totally fits. And then she's a total beast, as we used to say, like the ultimate swimming compliment. She's a beast. And I just kind of love it. Like just kind of quiet out of nowhere, training so hard, so talented.
The difference, the thing is actually there is a comparison with the gymnastics thing insofar as she is so dominant that there is a way that in the 200, this wasn't true. She won the 200 by not as much as she won the 400 and as much as...
Because it's a shorter race.
Yeah. No, of course. But, like, so it seemed closer. But, like, because she's so dominant, there is a lack of tension in some of her races. Like, she just gets out ahead and it's cool and awesome. But it's also, like, it's not exciting in the same way because she's just crushing.
So I'm also very interested in the way people are talking about Katie Ledecky's stroke. People are saying she swims like a man. And
people aren't actually saying that.
Right. Well, it's been a... It's a shorthand for describing her loping stroke. She breathes only to the right, which most female distance swimmers breathe to the right and the left because it makes for a smoother stroke. She kind of hitches out of the water. She has a lot of strength coming from her hips, and it's a stroke that you see more on men because it's like it takes more strength to
Sun
do
Yang
it.
Sun Yang is known for his hip movement.
Yeah, and it's very cool that she does it, and it's a compliment that's not meant to be a sexist compliment in swimming
circles.
This
is exactly what I'm saying. I don't think it is a sexist compliment because of this difference between men and women and their physicality. It's like a very hard stroke for women to do because it requires so much core strength. It's possible also that less women have been pushed to do it because it's not what they did before. The fact that Katie Ledecky can do it doesn't mean she like in some way does mean she quote unquote swims like a man because she has modeled her stroke on Michael Phelps. But that's not to take anything away from Katie Ledecky. But it's like I think we are so allergic to this comparison in our daily lives that when you say it in the context of sports, it just sounds awful, but is like actually a compliment. It's like insofar as a woman who swims like a man is a lot faster than women usually are. And that's like that's what they're focusing on. It's not like all the other stuff around gender that we would hear it when we'd say like you do this like a man.
Yeah.
We also had at this swim meet at the Olympics the really focus on Lily King. I think perhaps, Willa, as you suggested, because she was willing to go there as far as her finger wagging goes and her calling out of Yulia Efimova as a drug cheat. And she did something that you know, journalist-like, but isn't necessarily good for her career, which, although I suppose as a swimmer it doesn't matter, of, you know, sort of talking a little bit out of school, although probably in a way that most people wanted. What do y'all make of Lily King?
It's interesting because I think it will be good for her career because we're just in this moment of intense patriotism, especially vis-a-vis Russia. I think there's a way in which I enjoyed watching it. It was good TV. I sort of like when athletes don't just behave themselves meekly. Yeah. Like, I think they should be able to show us their personalities. But it is also like she's playing judge and jury instead of the IOC on this poor Russian athlete who, it's true, doped as part of like a basically a state-sponsored doping ring, was cleared to compete, is being booed mercilessly by everyone in the stadium, is like, it's just like on a human level, Yulia Efimova has had a rough, hard week, and Lily King might be like right on the issues, by the way, as if no Americans have ever doped. Let's just take a second. But like, it seems like it's a little vicious. I get where she's coming from. It seemed like at some point it sort of like crossed the line.
There was a really good
loved it so much.
There was a really good segment on the Olympic special that Hang Up and Listen is doing every morning on Tuesday about the way that the IOC has been completely useless and has really not done its job with the doping Russians or with any dopers really, and that even though the IOC has completely failed to do its job and left it to the athletes, you know, they essentially wanted to say that they'd done something, but they really did not exclude drug cheats.
June is looking at me like I'm a representative of the IOC here. Like, she really is.
I'm associating with. I have to admit in a weird way that, because I am too policing the athletes' bodies, that I love the way Lily King looks. She looks like a normal person. Like, it's, you know, whereas some of the swimmers, especially, and obviously the track and field athletes. Is it?
I think it might be breaststroke. Yeah, yeah. Is like uses different muscles, like your
legs
more or less.
Yeah, she doesn't. Yeah, exactly. She doesn't have that crazy lean look, and I kind of like that.
Breaststroke is so bogus, by the way.
It's one that the Brits are good at.
It's like, do the three-legged race as part of a track and field event.
Brits are really good at breaststroke.
I was a breaststroke.
Were you really? Oh, my God, Noreen.
It's okay.
I know so much about you now. The real insight.
Wait, I love the doping controversies. I feel like they give you villains to like root against, and even if it's not true, it adds the tension.
These are people, Noreen.
What? It's television. Come on. Well, no, seriously though, don't you kind of love the like, did she or didn't she? Like with the Hungarian.
Well, I don't like it because it's so unsatisfying. Okay. It's like we will never know, and we will just never know. And so there's just a whisper campaign, which is totally unfair, and there's also no clarity, which is totally unfair, and everybody's screwed. The people are being accused who did it. The people being accused who didn't do it, the people who aren't doing it. I just think it's really...
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's unseemly.
There's something unsatisfying. I mean, there's something unseemly about journalists doing it, obviously. But it is... I think you're right, Willa, that it is just unsatisfactory because essentially everybody decides that they think person X, who's usually a foreigner, which is to say a non-American, is doping. And then they just sort of, the way that they talk of like, we might never know, she's not yet tested positive. I mean, like all of the way that we talk about it, it's just like, you know, you've not yet proved that you're an alien. Therefore, you might be an alien from outer space. You know, it's
Nori's like, it's cool. I like the drama.
I'm an alien. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I think it's correct to note when someone has made crazy strides in their performance after the age of like 25. That is highly atypical.
I mean, after the age of 20.
Yeah. And when that happens, I think if you ignored that as a journalist, would you be doing your job?
Well, I think that we're in a time where it's essentially... It is almost libelous about the people even just to note that. And also, we don't say it about Americans. Because there are American swimmers at this Olympics who've also had these big jumps in their performances. And we don't ever say it about them. We only say it about foreigners. And, you know, as a person, as a human, I do have my suspicions. I know exactly what you're talking about. But we can't say it. It's not... You can observe that the big jumps have been made, but that's all you can say.
I think the thing about the journalist thing that's a little more fraught is that we know journalists have people tell them probably exactly what they think. They just say it's off the record. So it's like it's not as if necessarily journalists haven't had a lot of people. I mean, not that those people are necessarily know anything, but have more information than us just from swimming a lot that like if everyone in the swimming community is like, this is crazy, this is not possible. But you can't print that because it is libelous.
Right. I also think just on the question of foreigners, I mean, Russia has a very long and very recent history of doping as a culture. State-sponsored.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Secondly, in other countries, you know, the United States is like a super wealthy country that devotes a lot of its resources to athletics, right? And so we have advantages that might or might not account for, you know, strides that athletes have made. But in poorer countries, let's say, where there isn't maybe as many, there aren't perhaps as many resources devoted to training, and then all of a sudden someone like completely radically becomes faster. I'm sorry, like it's not because they, you know, it may not be because
Are we literally like avoiding being libelous ourselves by not just talking about what we're talking about? Like, we don't want to just say the name of the person we're talking about.
I don't know who you're talking about, Willa. Are you
really?
Talking about the Iron Lady?
Just all be coy. Well, that's so interesting. I mean, this is like, how can we blame anyone else for being coy if like you're both thinking of the same person?
Are we talking about the Iron Lady?
Aren't you?
I wasn't talking about anybody in specific.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the Iron Lady, who's an interesting case in and of herself. I can't. What's her name?
Her name is Katinka Hosu.
Katinka Hosu is a Hungarian swimmer who has been setting world records at this Olympics.
And for a few years now.
Yes. Following the hiring of her new coach, who happens to be her husband, who she met at USC where they were both swimmers. She's made great strides under his care. There are all kinds of not full accusations that he's abusive of her in some way, whether emotionally or otherwise. As a coach, like, people have seen them on deck, sort of, you know, him screaming at her and her like not even making eye contact. It just seems to be squicking people out in some way. And then there is, you know, the question of, is she doping or not?
Desmond had a good article about her, and because the Times ran a piece about basically the relationship she has with her husband. And Desmond was like, is this an abuse? Is this like a profile masquerading, like an abuse story masquerading as a profile? Or is this a doping story masquerading as a profile? Which is it? And it was coy about both of those things. I mean, I don't think there's proof of either. So it could only be coy. And so then it becomes like, is it a journalist's job to be coy if everyone else is talking about it? Or is it a journalist's job to not say things that they don't know are true, and so not be coy at all and totally just kick out those elements in the story?
Well, and I think also the fact that their husband and wife makes it more complicated.
And that he's a freak.
And
he's a what?
He's a freak. I mean, he's the way that he acts on poolside is...
No, but the way he acts on poolside is just the way like people act in like NFL games. Like, it's just not what you do.
Yes,
it's like a little bit
yes.
about the manners of swimming. It's like, so he's really amped. It's his wife. Like, okay.
Yeah, he seems a little roidy, let's be honest.
Yeah. And I think he's a hunk.
I do like his hair.
He's a roidy hunk. He has a cute haircut. He has, like, lame tattoos, but, like, he's not. I just, like, whatever. Their whole thing is, like, her heart. Her flashing, like, the Taylor Swift heart. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be Taylor Swift's, but the hand heart at him was very... I mean, it's really fascinating. I mean, it is a fascinating story. And this is one of those things also where I think the Olympics coverage has, like, let us down, because, like, that's a real character that I would like to know more about, not just necessarily as a villain. Like, give me the whole thing. She imploded in 2012. Like, that's what happened. She had a terrible Olympics and she shouldn't have. And, like, so you could say, like, he got her head together, which is sort of the narrative that's not about doping or abuse is that.
Well, weightlifting, allegedly. She started lifting very heavy weights.
And swimming a crazy program that other people can't, because they are either in school or, you know, just have lives.
And, I thought it was that she didn't train as much, but she competed more, which is interesting.
Yeah, so I think she does do weights, and she swims all over the world at a program that nobody else even does a fraction of.
I mean, it is just interesting that, like, we want to talk about this, but it doesn't feel like there's an appropriate forum to talk about this without, like, slandering someone. And that's, like... Where, you know, it's like, where the are people who write about the Olympics and think about the Olympics supposed to be where the conversation is? Or is that, like, just really inappropriate because we don't have enough information to have that conversation?
On that note, I'm afraid we have to say goodbye to the Olympics. All right, recommendations. What do you have for us, Noreen?
This recommendation is kind of in honor of June Thomas. I read my first Patricia Highsmith novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley, and I don't know why I waited so long. I'm going to buy them all. It's a perfect nothing is meant as an insult by this statement. It's a perfect beach read because it's like, you know, keeps you reading, but it's also super well written. Patricia Highsmith. I'm discovering it for the first time. Everyone else should too if they haven't
yet. You know, I am absolutely fascinated by biographies of Patricia Highsmith. There have been several really good ones and really interesting ones. And I actually like biographies of her more than I like her books. And I like her books pretty well. Okay, mine is a poem. "For I Will Consider My Dog Percy" by Mary Oliver from her collection A Thousand Mornings. And it's about losing a much-loved pet. I just recently lost mine, well, after 21 years. And it's something so good because, like, it's amazing how poetry can, like, allow you to experience feelings that you don't really, can't really tap into normally. So it's a fantastic poem. Even though it's about a dog and dogs are different from cats, it's still really good.
Can you read any of it? Do you have it? You don't have it with you?
I do actually, but...
You don't want to. Okay.
But it's really good. Willow, what about you?
I'm going to recommend a viral video that's like from 2002 or 4. Mary Carrillo.
Love her. I used to know her, you know.
I didn't know that. You could tell us about that later. Mary Carrillo, is still doing some announcing at the Olympics.
Although
or some
I haven't
hosting
seen her much.
But allegedly, I think she's around. Okay. I haven't seen her much either. Okay, I'll do it again. So Mary Carrillo has done announcing for the Olympics over the years, and she did has done a lot of wackier things, but a video from an earlier Olympics in the aughts just surfaced sort of on a lot of websites, and it's amazing. It's a rant about badminton. I don't even want to ruin it for you. It starts out extremely... She has a very deadpan voice and sort of a monotone, deep monotone. It starts out just sort of seemingly comparing official badminton equipment with like what you have in your garage, and then kind of turns into this surrealist, detailed, hilarious slice of parenthood, suburbia life about what it is to play badminton in a regular situation that's not the Olympics. That is like, it's really, really wonderful. It's really, really funny. I can't sell it properly. I can only recommend that you go watch it.
I'm sure we'll enjoy it more by being surprised by it. All right. So that's our show. Thanks to our producer, Anne Hepperman. The executive producer of Slate Podcasts is Steve Lichtai. And Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of the Panoply Network. Our intern is Daniel Schrader. He's awesome. The XX Gabfest is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply. Our show page, where you can find links to all the stories we mentioned in today's show, is slate.com/xx. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/XXGabFest. And you can email us at xxgabfest@slate.com to let us know what you thought of the show. For Noreen Malone and Willa Paskin, I'm Jean Thomas. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time.